Welcome back, Red Ice members. We are talking with Andy Thomas about the we're talking about the climate of fear, the era of turmoil, and the energy of hope, and the election of Barack Obama, among many other things. We've been talking about crop circles too, of course. But in this segment here, I'd like to begin to talk a little bit more about, I guess, demand for control that seems to be coming as well in regards to how the fear agenda is being played out, and also this idea of depopulation. I'm just reminded of this article that even Wired magazine just the other day published about the Georgia Guidestones, that openly, in one sense, depending on how you interpret that, of course, talks about keeping the population low in that regard. So again, the information is coming out more and more in the mainstream all the time, and I'm just amazed how blatant and how open this is. And the magazine, as it were, portrayed was very much in a questioning manner, of course. They questioned who built these monuments, who dedicated them, who paid for them, and so forth. But again, it means that things are coming out, as it were. And Andy, I'd like to ask you a little bit about this idea about depopulation and what you think the main reasons for that are. Some people are into this idea that the elite will want to have get the control back, if you will, of the planet. They want to have just a few people around and if you will, enjoy the benefits of this, well, parasitical planet that it actually really is, you know. But what's your take on it? Why do you think that this is an agenda at this particular time?
Well, I think this is where you come to the point where you have to try, if possible, to sort of put yourself into the minds of those who might be fomenting these agendas. Because obviously the kind of the standard view of the powers that are out there is that they're evil and what they're trying to do is get rid of us all and do horrible things to us. Now, maybe that's true, but of course they may not see it through those eyes. Now, it may well be that those people who are seemingly pulling the strings from behind the scenes honestly believe that they are doing it for the best of reasons. Now, this may not actually concur with what we want. Nonetheless, I think we have to consider that they may have a belief that justifies anything they do. Now, that doesn't make it right, clearly. No. But I think it helps us to understand if we try to see it through that sort of viewpoint. So, in other words, I'm not sure that those creating these agendas of control and of possible depopulation would be doing it just to be evil. One presumes they might do it because they honestly thought that it was the best thing for the world, or they just think that it would be better if it was the world for them and nobody else. But nonetheless, this is where you have to consider that they must surely believe that the end justify the means, and therefore, when you see it through that viewpoint, it's not so impossible that, for instance, they might have sacrificed nearly 3,000 people to create 9/11. Because this is one of the objections you often hear to conspiracy theory, which is that, well, who would dare do such a thing to their own people? Who would possibly do that? But you have to look a little bit wider, because if you believe that you're working for a more ultimate good, and there is evidence that some of, whether you want to call them the elite or the Illuminati or whatever you want to call them, whoever these people are pulling the strings, there does seem to be a strong seam of occult belief running through it. And I think that their convictions that what they're doing is right would be very solid. So therefore, if they thought a world without three-quarters of the current population was a good thing for the planet, they would presumably just carry on. And this is where it becomes difficult, because then you're dealing with people that you can't appeal to their better nature. And so therefore, all you can try to do is try to just expose the fact that this kind of program may be going on and try to counterbalance it. And obviously, the more awareness there is that these things might be happening, the less likely it is that they can succeed. And I mean, I think this is a case in point with the weapons of mass destruction issue. Now, when it became clear that that had been pretty much created to create the mandate to go into Iraq, I think people actually were much more cynical. Now, if they wanted to create another similar war, whether they wanted to go into Iran or these days likely Pakistan or wherever, nonetheless, it's going to be much, much harder for the powers that be to do that because so many people are now more aware.
Yeah.
And they are looking at what's going on. And I think the weapons of mass destruction debacle did open a lot of eyes to that. So, you know, I am willing to believe that if people had not protested to the degree that they did about the Iraq war, had people not done that, we probably would have been bombing Iran, you know, 2 years ago. Some people say, well, the Iraq war demonstrations for peace didn't work, because they did carry on. But I would argue that you have to look more long-term than that. And what it told the powers that be was that there are millions of people that do care. Mm-hmm. I mean, London alone, and lots of other cities too, but London alone had its biggest ever demonstration against the Iraq war. Now, somebody sitting there is going to have to realize sooner or later, okay, maybe we can't just do anything we want too quickly. And therefore, it stays their hand. And so, therefore, with all of this stuff that we're talking about, we have to just make them aware that we are aware. And the more people that see what's going on, and again, 9/11 is a great case in point here, the huge rise of doubt in the official story does tell them that they can't just get away with anything. And I think up to now, they have believed possibly that they can. And we're saying they, without truly knowing who they are. There are some researchers that do believe that we can point the finger and name names, and some, I'm sure, are true. Some of it, we must, of course, also remember, is still speculation, and there's a lot of work to be done to reveal exactly what and who it is we're talking about. So we can only guess to a degree here. But to go back to the subject of depopulation, I mean, again, we need to be slightly careful because a few years ago there was, for instance, a lecture given by Dr. Eric Pienka of the Texas Academy for Sciences, in which it was reported that he had actually advocated exterminating most of the human population. Mm. Now, that very quickly went around the conspiracy world as a fact that he had said that. If you actually look at a statement that Dr. Pienka then put out later, that's not quite what he said. What he said was he thought that sooner or later we would be wiped out, not that we should be, although he did still support the view the world would be better with less people. Nonetheless, he was not, in fact, a sort of Machiavellian evil figure saying that we should all die. So I think, again, what this speaks of more is a sign of how deeply we mistrust authority, the fact that we are willing to believe that somebody out there wants to wipe us all out. So yes. I think the conspiracy world also needs to look at its own beliefs and look at its own psychology behind these beliefs. And be very careful that it doesn't project outwards a world that is perhaps too dark. And I do think we always need to strike the balance here. Be prepared for certain things being true, but not to make the absolute assumption that they're true. But either way, always just trying to create debates that are very open so that therefore it makes it less likely that we can be hoodwinked or in any way abused, because the more people that are aware of what's going on, the less likely that that can happen.
Exactly. A very, very good point. And many people, they want to have a clear enemy in that sense. Many people want to have it simple, a face that represents that evil that we actually do see in the world in that sense. And again, you mentioned the they. You know, do you think that it's we're talking about a small, very, very highly organized group here, or a large group, or just a kind of a philosophical ideology, if you will, that actually just connects many of these people who are working towards the New World Order agenda, for instance? Do you have any ideas or theories about this?
Well, you see, I think this is one of the interesting aspects, is that when you boil it down, we don't know for sure who exactly we are dealing with, beyond a few obvious faces. Now, I mean, There was a book which came out a year or so back, I believe by Mark Rothko, I have to check that, but and it was basically about the 6,000 people that run the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a conspiracy book, it was a mainstream book just looking at the people who had the most influence in the world. But what was interesting was now that book received a lot of coverage in the press, happy mainstream coverage, and yet a lot of the names mentioned in that book are a lot of the very same names that conspiracy theorists point their fingers at as being the people who were trying to create this control agenda. So I think probably we could certainly identify a lot of the key names. And of course we have these unelected sort of quangos, which have very high level meetings, you know, the obvious ones like the Bilderberg Group,
sure,
the
sure.
Trilateral Commission, the Tavistock Institute, you know, et cetera.
Yes.
When you look at the people who now fairly openly attend these meetings, I think we can pretty much have an idea of who it is that is pulling the strings. Now, whether they are the same people that seem to also have these very shadowy occult beliefs that some of the secret societies that seem to bind some of these people together seem to hold, now obviously that then gets more into the realm of speculation. But of course we also have things like the Bohemian Grove pageant, the cremation of care ceremony, which is carried out every year. And I mean, this is another interesting thing, is that obviously a lot of influential leaders and politicians and industrialists or whatever, you know, each year are gathering in these woods in California and attending these strange rituals. Now, again, you have to say, is this evidence that they are absolute sort of occultists, or is it just a silly little pageant that they think is more important than it really is?
Mm.
I don't know. But what I think is important is that it's something that is not spoken about overtly. And because of that, of course, it just invites further speculation. It invites the conspiracy world to want to know what is going on. So I think they should be more open about what the intentions behind the Bohemian Grove rituals are if they don't want people to suspect them of being evil murderers. And I think this is the problem, because they are not open about what goes on in places like that, you are inevitably inviting the conspiracy world to therefore fill the vacuum with its own ideas, which to some degrees, of course, it has to do.
Mm.
But knowing the true motivation of these people, obviously, it can only be guesswork to a degree. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, as long as what we put out there when we're speculating is definitely pronounced to be speculation. And I think one of the things that can put people off, people trying to reveal these hidden agendas, is that some of the views you hear are very extreme. They're very dogmatic. They will hear, you know, no opposition. And that doesn't help, because what I tend to find is that people who are on the fringes of interest in the kind of conspiracy stuff, they're very easily put off when they hear somebody ranting and raving about the Illuminati, you know, sacrificing children to stone owls and all of that.
Mm.
I think you have to be careful that it's presented in such a way that you maintain a balance and say, well, we don't really know what's going on here, but there are certain key pieces of evidence that you can look at. And that's where I think events like 9/11 are very important, because they're a real world fact and figures that absolutely reveal that the truth has not been told about that. But then again, that's all you can say. You can say, okay, what they said happened here clearly didn't. The physics of the falls of the towers are clearly in question, and you list the reasons why. I think we need to be very careful we don't hit people over the head too quickly with conclusions as to who, what, where did do it, unless we have that absolute evidence. What we need to create at the moment is a world that gets people questioning.
Yes.
And just asking themselves the question, hang on a minute, why does the news want me to believe this today? And then a lot of it will fall into place. I do truly believe that. But all the time we are trying to hit people with our own dogma as to what we think is going on, it actually creates a situation where people are repelled away, which is a shame, because I definitely think there are areas that do need looking at under the microscope by as many people as possible. But extremism does put people off, and I think we need to be very careful with how we present these discussions to, shall we say, you know, the outer world.
Well, it's a good point, and also at the same time, I also feel that it's important to let people have the freedom. And I'm not saying that you're saying this, of course, but again, just put this in there that people should have the freedom to go deep and go into the fringe areas to kind of get new information, if you will, and new perspectives. Meaning that, although I absolutely agree with you, you have to be careful how you present that and how you reveal or talk about that information. But for instance, if we go beyond geopolitics, for instance, do you entertain at all the, well, let's talk about the alien agenda, for instance. Is that something that you ponder upon, have thought about, or entertained?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, I mean, when you're involved in the world of crop circles, you very quickly come up against this notion that there has been contact with extraterrestrials going on at high levels with governments of the world for many years. Now, that's not immediately to say that extraterrestrials are necessarily making crop circles, although many people believe they are.
Sure.
But this is something which, again, you can say some things as a definite. And one of them is that there has clearly been a cover-up concerning UFOs. I mean, there is no question about this. And I mean, I myself, over the years, have spoken to commercial airline pilots who have seen UFOs, flying saucers in the traditional sense of the word, and they almost are quite casual about the way they talk about it. But they also acknowledge that it gets to the point where they don't bother to report it because it's not worth the trouble that they have to go through to do so. And it's very, very clear that government authorities have covered up information on UFOs and potential extraterrestrial contact, which then again leads to this speculation. Well, why don't they want us to know? What is it that's going on? And that's when you then have to step outside of the authorities and speak to people who have claimed to have had personal experience with extraterrestrials, with UFOs. And I think one of the interesting things that comes out of that for me, which again I'm writing about in the Truth Agenda, is the amount of UFO contactees, if you like, who claim to have been given visions of the future. And this is a recurring thing that comes out with people who've had these encounters with either extraterrestrial beings or just consciousness, you know, whether it's an out-of-body type experience or a physical abduction. Many of them have been given visions and prophecies and predictions that these times that we're now going into now, the next few years, would be crucial times for humanity. Now, it stands to reason that if governments do have contact with extraterrestrial levels, they also will be party to this information. And that is why I personally am increasingly of the view that they are certainly aware that there is the possibility for huge change. And that's why they are accelerating their programs for one world government, for new world order, for control now, because they want to make absolutely sure that if any of these prophecies and predictions come true, that they are not going to lose out, that they are going to maintain their hold on the people that are in the world. And I think this then begins to make sense of some of what we have seen in the world. Now, maybe we're putting two and two together and making five, but maybe we're not. And certainly all of this, yep, including the extraterrestrial agenda, which many people believe in, it must be discussed. It must be brought out into the open. And, yes, you know, all power to people, you know, like Stephen Greer, who has, of course, initiated the Disclosure Project. All power to military personnel who are whistleblowing and coming forward and saying that they, you know about extraterrestrials, because these things now need to be discussed very openly. Although, of course, even there you need to be careful, because we can't say for sure that everything that's being said is the truth. And I know one problem we have at the moment is, of course, that Ed Mitchell, the Apollo 16 astronaut, now he has just recently gone very public with claims that NASA and the US government are keeping secrets about extraterrestrials. Mm. Now, obviously, that seems like a very important move, but the irony, and this is fairly typical of the conspiracy world, is that a certain group of other people think that that in itself is misinformation.
Yes, exactly.
And certainly those that believe that we never actually went to the moon, or at least not in the way we were told, and that the photographs have been faked, believe that Ed Mitchell's ET claims are in themselves a distraction. And this, of course, is where you get into this wonderful world of a spiral into total unknowing, because you just do not know who is telling the truth. And I think that this is the problem we've got at the moment, is knowing the absolute truth of all of these things that are being discussed is extremely hard. And that's why I think we're not yet at the stage where we're going to get that kind of clarity. And so therefore, everything needs to be put onto the table, no matter how extreme the belief, and be up for discussion, so that maybe we will sooner or later get a little bit closer to discerning what is, you know, of value and what is not. But I still think we're at the stage where we just need to be able to be open, not fear the ridicule, just say, hey, this is what I'm interested in, this is what I believe, I appreciate it sounds a little bit odd to you, but come on, let's talk.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing is, I find when you do that, people will have that discussion.
Yes.
And this is what I find at lectures. And I mean, you know, I give many lectures to all sorts of groups, not just conferences where there are people who are already interested in this, but also to groups like the Women's Institute, Rotary Clubs, Probus Clubs, you know, real world people, if you want to call them that. And they are very open to these debates if you can present evidence to them in a very balanced and rational way. And I'm always much encouraged by the reaction that people do want to hear this stuff if they feel you're not hitting them around the head with it,
that's
telling
right.
them what they must believe.
Yes.
But if you offer it to them and say, well, hey, this is what I'm interested in, you know, if you're also interested, let's chat. I find then you can open debates up, and I think this is what everybody who has these interests needs to do, and try to be as non-dogmatic about it as possible. And that way, I think we will probably get somewhere in the end.
Absolutely. And I think that that also helps to open people up if you're not dogmatic about the truth or what you believe in that sense, meaning that, okay, obviously we're all trying to find the truth, right? But if you close yourself down at an early stage, you're not going to be able to explore all the different perspectives. And hence, I feel that then you're not actually going to come any closer to the truth. You know, it is very much of an information warfare at these particular times as well. And I think that also the powers that be are absolutely taking this as an advantage in the information warfare, if you will, that just release all of this, you know, junk information, and we will be in one sense then confused about, okay, where do we even begin here? What's true, what's not? But if you disseminated this information, you will know from the top speaking that we will have a better idea of what actually is going on, and it will be more easy to control people. So that's also something to have in mind. But again, if you're not that protective, I guess, in that sense of that this is the right way to think and this is the only truth that I have, then I think it will be more easy to come to your own conclusion. And at the end of the day, I think that that's what is most important, not the kind of the objective truth. I think the objective truth is something that the New World Order is trying to impose on us. They're trying to say to us, this is what reality is, and we decide what that is at this point. Diversity in opinion and perspectives is, I think, the most important thing at this time, Andy.
I would agree very much with that. And I think this is the problem that we've had, is that we've sort of got into this very sort of this world of absolutes. You know, we've had the media showing us a version of reality and saying this is how it is. You have government saying that. But you also have other debates. I mean, of course, recently we've had the whole celebration of Charles Darwin, and that's brought up some interesting debates, because you then get into this evolution versus the Bible story. And I think that's been interesting, because we have figures who have become elevated to great places of sort of intellectual honor in our society, people like Richard Dawkins, the biologist. Now, I mean, Dawkins, I think, makes some very good points when he points out problems with people's dogmatic beliefs for which they have no proof. But what he can't see, and what I find amazing, is that, of course, Dawkins himself is equally dogmatic.
Yes.
He is as extreme as the people that he criticizes, but in a different way.
Yep.
So, you know, he is, if you like, supporting extreme scientism, pointing the finger at people with extreme religious views, say, and yet really what he's accusing them of, he is equally guilty of. And this is where I think we've got this kind of rather annoying sort of sense of polarities, Whereas if people just were willing to say, okay, well, look, here are two viewpoints. Isn't it interesting that they're so different? Let's talk about those differences in a constructive and easy way and see what remains in the middle. Then I think we could get somewhere. But this is where I think, you know, opinions not based in absolute truths that are absolutely provable, and let's face it, Dawkins cannot absolutely prove that God does not exist, but equally religious people cannot absolutely prove that evolution is not real.
Right.
You know, this is the problem. But what we can do is look at what's in the middle that I think is identifiable and start there. And it, not that I want to keep coming back to it, but I do think this is where political situations like the weapons of mass destruction or like 9/11 are very useful, because there are things that so many people witnessed or so many people talked about at the time that are very much in the public domain, which even if you just take that information, when you actually try to make sense of it, you realize that there are serious anomalies that arise from the information that is already available. And therefore, I think you can begin to come to a series of judgments about certain bits of evidence. And now this is where I think it gets interesting. So you can put aside the polarities. You can say, well, it doesn't matter who perpetrated 9/11. Let's just look at the physics of 9/11. Let's look at how the towers collapsed. Let's look at the bizarre events of the day that don't make any sense in the usual way that security would have managed itself.
Mm.
And then you can list anomalies. And this is what people like David Ray Griffin, who I have great respect for, are doing. They're simply listing the anomalies. They're not drawing their own conclusions. They're just pointing out, right, this now needs explaining. This needs looking at. And to take another example, I mean, to go back to the lunar conspiracy theory, I mean, that is an interesting one. Now, we can't say that they didn't land on the moon because we weren't there.
Right.
But what we can say is that the evidence that has been delivered has some question marks. And some of the pictures do look like studio portraits. Well, let's look at that. Let's look at the lighting. Let's look at the anomalies and the shadows and the angles and all of these things that people talk about. And I think it does become clear that at the very least, some of those images could not possibly have been taken without artificial lighting. Now, that doesn't mean we didn't go to the moon, but it does mean there are issues there that need serious reappraisal.
Yes.
And if you can start to look at those bits of evidence that we do have, that we can get some sort of sense of objective reality on, then the subjective realities may start eventually to sort of collapse into the middle with them, and something will emerge where we can be much more discerning about what the overall collective reality of it is. But yeah, at the moment, what we need to do is get all that very clear evidence that we do have laid out as neatly as possible, so that people who are very confused by it all, as a lot of people are at the moment, you know, especially with it all stirred in with the 2012 prophecies and all of this sense of anticipation and impending possible disaster, people don't understand. If they could see the issues, if they could put it together with all of this stuff being discussed, maybe they'll then get a glimpse into a new way of looking at things. And that's certainly what I'm attempting to do, what lots of other researchers out there are trying to do. But we do need, as you say, to be able to express any viewpoint, however strange it may seem to others, and it can then be appraised and dispensed with if it's nonsense, or looked at again if it has some level of reality to it. But, you know, these are the times to do it. And I think further polarization, just shouting at somebody at the other end of the room saying, well, you're wrong, without the evidence, is, I think we're beyond those times now.
Yes.
And we've got to find a way to bring people together in the middle, because that's where solutions will be born.
Absolutely. And again, we're just a few years, as I said, a few years into this kind of era of truth, or the unveiling, if you will, I'm hopeful for, you know, new productions, be it film or new writings, books, and so forth, because we're kind of slowly laying the puzzle and building the picture of what is going on and how our world is being, have been shaped, so to speak, in the past. And also, Andy, I want to ask you if we tie this back again and talk about this, the group that are trying to control this planet. Do you think that they are, in that sense, all powerful, or do you think that they actually wish that they were all powerful, and what we're witnessing right now is their attempts to control events on this planet, but in many cases it actually fails miserably because some of the things are so, well, actually stupid and so incredibly, you know, again, it's some of these things that you brought up about 9/11, it's like, what is going on here? How can some of this stuff be so blatantly, these are mistakes, as I see it, in the geopolitical game, as it were, or is there another, even higher purpose to all this, meaning that this actually are the generators that bring people out from ignorance, so to speak, and into a higher form of awareness, meaning that when people begin to see and witnessing these anomalies, they're going to ask more questions, become more intelligent because of that, they're going to seek new answers to these questions. What do you think, Andy?
Well, I mean, I think your last point is definitely true, is that all the kind of anomalies which seem to have been left there in this trail from these elite powers, yeah, are actually raising a new consciousness. But whether that's the intention, I suspected it wasn't. And I think this is very important, is that there is a tendency in the conspiracy world to give these people, these elite groups that are believed to be there, too much power. And the fact is, if they were all powerful, they actually wouldn't be need to, you know, they wouldn't need to be doing some of the things they're having to do now to control us, to persuade us into certain lines of thought. They clearly have not achieved their objective, or they wouldn't need to be trying anywhere near as hard as they are now. And I mean, there is a viewpoint that, you know, we're not dealing with just one coherent group, but there may actually be factions, yes, within this elite group. And I mean, again, this offers some hope because, of course, you know, if they are not entirely of one mind, then they are not going to be as strong as they would like to be. Now, perhaps this is what they're trying to achieve by creating the one world government scenario. They must believe that the more centralized it can be, excuse me, the more then they will have a chance to fashion the world as they want. But I suspect that that's not where it's at yet. And that gives hope because it means they've still got a lot of work to do. And I believe they do make mistakes. And I believe that 9/11, as you said, is a case in point where I think it was such an audacious thing to try to pull off. They didn't think anybody would ever question it. And I think that may be where they've slipped up. Unless there's some utterly bizarre double bluff going on and that the creation of a truth campaign is in itself sort of part of their machinations, but personally I don't believe it is. If that's not the case, I think they just honestly believe nobody would question it. And I suspect that they are shocked by how many people have said, hang on a minute, this isn't right. And I think this is where there were sloppy errors on the day, little things that they didn't think they would ever have to explain, which are now being analyzed under the microscope, and people are saying, well, this doesn't make sense. You know, this is, if you like, it's kind of like the Emperor's New Clothes movement. People are realizing, well, these things, you know, they just don't make sense. And therefore, the people we're dealing with are not all powerful. The weapons of mass destruction thing, again, I almost get the feeling it was a slightly half-baked idea that nobody thought through too much about what would happen after it. Now, you could argue they got away with that because, sadly, we all voted back into power the very people that allowed that war in Iraq to occur. But nonetheless, I think the disillusionment felt by people in our leaders as a result of that war and the subsequent stuff that's carried on since, I think has undermined them. And I get the feeling they do make mistakes. They're not all powerful, and there are factions within who may be squabbling between themselves, yes, as to how this should be done. But as I say, maybe they're hoping that the nearer they can get to one world government, the nearer they will be to this state where there isn't so much squabbling between themselves. And certainly this is the belief of some, is that it's not as coherent as we're told. And again, I think we need to be very careful. We don't give them that much power.
Exactly.
If these people are trying to run the world, they are still people. still human beings. I mean, unless you subscribe to the view that they are extraterrestrial reptilians, which some people believe, and that may be true, it may not be true, but essentially, I suspect we're dealing with people. People are flawed, people make mistakes, and they're the same as us. And we were talking earlier on about the collective consciousness. Now, the thing is, the collective consciousness theory says that all our minds are linked. Now, on one hand, you could argue that's a bad thing because it means our minds are then linked to the realms of the darker powers that be. And I think they're much more aware of the collective process than the general populace is. Yes. And I think they use it to spread darkness and fear through the collective like a domino effect.
Yes.
But on the other hand, the plus side of that, and I urge people to go and look up the Global Consciousness Project and books like The Field by Lynn McTaggart and all of these things. I mean, we're talking early days for the science of consciousness, but the indications are that when lots of people focus their thoughts on the same thing at the same time, but particularly with very specific intent, and that seems to make a huge difference, this is changing the world. It's creating recordable ripples of, let's call it, some energetic process that we don't fully understand. Now, that means that when enough people out here, outside of the elite groups, change their thoughts, change their lives, change the way they are, that must ripple back and affect the very elite that we're talking about here. So, in other words, they are not immune to the way we live our lives. And that offers massive hope. And I do think we need to very much come out of this view that what we're dealing with is a done deal, that there are evil powers that have just about nearly sewn up, you know, their agenda. Mm. Well, yes, I think they're further forward than they have been. But I also think there's so much awareness now that what's going on in the world isn't right, even by people that wouldn't see it in conspiratorial realms and see it in very real world terms. Nonetheless, I do think that people are standing up to be counted and trying to make a difference in a way that the elite groups did not anticipate. Mm. Now, this is where it comes down to the way we react. We touched on this earlier on. Mm. It may be that they're trying on one level to get some kind of mob rule going. I mean, you get the feeling that with the G20 protest a few weeks ago in London that they were hoping for more riots.
Yes.
But it actually didn't happen. I mean, most of the trouble we saw was generally quite small and very isolated. And in fact, what's come out of that is more a concentration on the police brutality rather than the actions of the people. And you do have to wonder, well, maybe, again, this was not what they anticipated. Now, there will be people listening to this will say, no, 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 that's a double bluff. You know, what they're trying to do is give police more powers. Now, of course, that might be true. But equally, in the collective, what it does is send round the view, well, actually, people are better than we're given credit for.
Yes.
And certainly the media in the days before G20 almost seemed to be encouraging rioting.
Yep.
It was almost kind of giving you the feeling that they wanted people to take to the streets. And although people did, most of those people were peaceful, sensible. They were not smashing in bank windows. That was a very, very few people. And even there, of course, there's been the, you know, the accusations of Asian provocateurs, which, of course, does happen in riots and things like this. But what's come out of it is, in fact, images of the police abusing people. So it's perhaps not what even they were anticipating. I think this is very important, that people are good on the whole. You get, obviously, people who are not so good, but we get fed a vision through the news that there's a lot of violence, that people are bad, and that, you know, we're in a world we should fear. Well, there are places like that, but on the whole, the average human being just wants to live their own lives peacefully and get on with people and make other people's lives better. And, I mean, it's interesting, when we had the snow a few months ago, I was driving back from London out with my partner, and we got stuck in the snow. Mm. And this was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and yet there were people coming out of their houses to help push cars up the hills in the snow. They were getting nothing out of it. They could have all stayed indoors, but they did, because there is still a human spirit which is very strong, which basically works for the collective good. Now, if there's an elite out there thinking that they can override that, I think they may be shocked by the power of those who want a more positive world. And maybe they anticipated too much that we would all just cave into darkness, and maybe we're not behaving the way they expected. And I think we should always consider that these people are not all powerful. You can believe in conspiracy theories, and that is fine where there is evidence, but we must not give these people that we are anticipating exist too much power, because I think that gives them the very power they want. It is the people that carry the real power. And I think that these are the years we're now moving into, as I say, where it's time to actually step into that and get a whole new rebalancing of where the real responsibility for society lies and who really calls the shots. And I absolutely do not think it is a done deal.
Very, very good points, all of them, I think, Andy. And do you think that the system that we're having currently now then is simply needs to be reformed and good people need to be put in place, or do you think that the system we have needs to be actually kind of, you know, demolished or eradicated, and a new system at the side will be built up with which has morality and ethics as its foundation? Any ideas?
Well, I mean, one thing that I would never advocate is this kind of smash the system way of thinking, because it never works. If you look at historical revolutions where people have tried to replace a system with something completely new, it always winds up essentially falling into the same pitfalls. We have the makings of something that could be a democratic process in this country if you took out of it the intrigues and the corruptions and the deceptions. It's not a perfect system, but it is a system that certainly has worked better than many others over the years. I think we need to look at the attitudes behind it, and I think we need to look very, very carefully at the corruption that goes on.
Yes.
I mean, just recently in England, we've had all this exposure about MPs claiming for expenses that they just shouldn't be claiming for. Nobody can respect that. Just a few months before that, we had lords in the House of Lords effectively taking bribes to lobby for certain things. This cannot be allowed to go on. Now, the unfortunate thing is that no consequences were brought down on these people, and it sent out the signal to certainly the population of England that these people can just do what the hell they like, and there's no comeback. And this is the problem, is that I think nobody can respect that, and sooner or later that system will crumble. So if it actually was run without these seams of dishonesty, and these are issues that we all have to deal with within ourselves, not just project outwards, but if we could all actually look at the way we live our lives and apply that to the systems that govern us, I think there could be something different.
Mm.
And I mean, you know, if you look at even the way that English Parliament is set up, I mean, even King Arthur knew that the best decisions were made in the round and a round table, but we're stuck with a system with a House of Commons where you've got two benches facing each other. And the distance between the two benches was originally set up so that they were precisely two swords lengths and a bit to prevent conflict breaking out. So in other words, the decisions are being made in a very chamber that anticipated conflict and did not, was not set up to encourage cooperation. And so I think we need to look at just everything from even the design of the places these decisions are made in to the kind of people that are there and the systems that govern them. But all the time you've got corruption, particularly to do with expenses and things like this. You don't even need conspiracy theory to come into the picture. You're
That's
looking
right.
at a system that cannot function properly. And what we're going to need, as I say, is a philosophical revolution where people put the greater good before their own needs. And that certainly is not what is occurring at the moment. And that's the problem, is that, okay, even if you got rid of the Illuminati tomorrow, even if you exposed them all and stopped them, human nature is still such that you will always get people gathering into little groups of power.
Yes.
And I think the only way around that, without going into the communist realms, is to have a much greater sense of collective responsibility. And, I mean, I've long thought you almost need some kind of jury service government. I think all the time that Parliament's entirely made up of people that want to be there, you're always going to get people who are there for the wrong reasons. They're there for power, they're there for the influence. You almost need a kind of a sort of national service where everybody does 1 year in Parliament, even if you don't want to be, because then you would at least get people there who might just get on with the job, who don't have any ulterior motive.
Right.
And certainly in this day and age of electronic communication, there's actually no reason why we couldn't begin to aspire to that kind of thing. I mean, more people vote for TV shows, talent shows, the X Factor, this kind of thing, than vote for governments these days.
Right.
So this is where the real people power is making itself known. But if you could apply those processes to decisions that actually mattered, we could have a whole different system where everybody took much more collective responsibility and didn't turn a blind eye to people who were lording it over us, but basically abusing their power. And of course, you know, the talk of the Illuminati, the elite, is the ultimate expression of that.
Yes.
What this is almost is a kind of the ultimate projection of our fears about those with great power. And it's, I suspect, become a reality. Even though, as I say, we're talking rather glibly about the Illuminati, we can't say for absolutely sure how this operates, but I think there is certainly a feeling that something that is the equivalent of that does seem to exist. But all of that is the ultimate expression of our own lack of collective will and collective responsibility. We've left too few people with too much power for too long. And this is where everybody needs to stand up and say, okay, enough is enough. We need to look at what's going on. I will take my space of responsibility here, just for this little corner here, if you will take yours. And that way, I think you will get a domino effect of something where people actually feel that they can make a difference and actually realize that when enough people stand up for something positive, it spreads.
Yes.
And at the moment, fear and darkness has been allowed to create this domino effect, which sadly seems to wash over us all too easily. However, what about creating a wave of dominoes back the other way with something positive? And people seem to forget these processes work both ways. And again, you look at some of the implications of the new physics of consciousness, and this is what it's saying. It's saying we can change the world even by what we think.
Yes.
And obviously, practical action must also follow, because you've got an outer world, you've got an inner world, you need both. But all of this is saying we now have an understanding that could change everything. But of course, all of this has to then be put into context of what people believe about 2012 and the changes associated with that. If any truth is there, will we even be living in the same kind of world or system just even in 5 years' time? And again, the questions raised by that are making people reassess what matters to them in their lives now.
Absolutely. I think that's a very, very many, many good points there, and they're brilliant. I think that's a good place to begin, also to round things up here for this time. And I do want to say, mention here again, then, that don't miss Andy's upcoming talk at the Alternative View. Go to avii.co.uk for more information about that. And we also, of course, want to mention your upcoming book, The Truth Agenda. And again, people can go to vitalsciencepublishing.co.uk. Will you have some more information up there for people?
Yeah, the information's not up there just yet, but will be going up hopefully within a month or so. And if anybody clicks onto the website from time to time, they will certainly soon get some information about it. But so it'll be out hopefully in the summer. So fingers crossed, people will hear about it very soon.
Absolutely. And then swirlednews.com, changingtimes.org.uk. We will have these links up on our website as well, redicecreations.com. Andy, thank you very much for your time here today. I really enjoyed it, and I think it was really interesting and very, very important as well to elaborate on these many perspectives and get this balanced view of things, as it were. So thank you again for your time, Andy.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's our program with Andy Thomas. Thank you for listening and paying attention and helping to expand the collective consciousness and adding to the world of possibilities. My thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. My name is Henrik. Stay tuned to Red Eyes, and we will talk more soon. Bye-bye.